If you're more of a visual learner or you like seeing charts, breakdowns, and exploring other topics, check out our Student Loan Planner YouTube channel. We've got quick explainer videos, deep dives, smart money tips you can actually see in action. Just search Student Loan Planner on YouTube and hit subscribe. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. We've got an action-packed episode for you today. We're going to take some listener questions at the top of the show, and then I'm going to talk about what the heck are parents and students going to do with this upcoming fall with the massive student loan changes coming down the pipeline. So let's take a listener question.
Thank you so much for taking my question. My question is regarding PSLF buyback. I am a single income home, so no joint, non-joint questions. Back in September of 2023, I did recertify my income with my 2022 tax returns, and I was placed on the SAVE plan with $0 payments for that following year. In August of 2024, I was placed on the SAVE forbearance and was on that forbearance for 12 months. Two of those months in the middle, I did get placed on administrative forbearance. So two of those months did count towards my PSLF forgiveness. But in August of 2025, I recertified with my 2024 tax returns and was placed on pay with a monthly payment above zero. My question is, when I go to apply for buyback, will they use the $0 payment I was making under SAVE prior to the SAVE forbearance, the one that I did with my 2022 tax returns, or will they go with my current payments under pay that were recertified with my 2024 tax returns, or will they have me submit my 2023 tax returns, which have never been submitted, to certify a completely independent payment calculation for that calendar year of August 2024 to July 2025. I didn't know if having those two administrative forbearance months right in the middle of that SAVE forbearance would make it be considered less than a year of buyback needed, because I'm technically only needing to buy back 10 months. So if you can answer those questions and help us all out, that'd be awesome. And you are amazing. Thank you so much.
So if you think about the buyback program, it specifically says if your forbearance lasts longer than 12 months, they're allowed to look at the tax returns for the years in question. That's the official rules. And so if somebody is SAVE and then they administrative forbearance and then they got into the pay program, it's kind of irrelevant in the sense of what your different payments were. What they're supposed to do is, if the buyback period is longer than a 12-month kind of window, which it sounds like this is, or close to it, then they're supposed to look at the taxable income from every calendar year in question and calculate a payment. What they will use to calculate that payment is anybody's guess. I would probably assume they will use IBR, because that is the long-term plan that is authorized long-term for folks who have loans in this particular time. But it's anybody's guess. I mean, I've heard of people getting calculations made on the repay plan. I mean, it's just all over the place with buyback because, you know, they don't really have much of a process to efficiently look at these applications. So I would just say go for buyback, but don't plan on it, because ultimately we don't know if they're going to junk the whole program at some point in the near future. So, you know, unfortunately, they're probably going to be looking at your tax returns when you get around to submitting buyback, which you want to do once you're at 120 months of total credit. Let's take another listener question.
Hey, Travis. My name is Dan. I'm a first-year attending pediatrician and longtime listener. I frequently advocate for others to listen to your podcasts and check out your site. Thank you for all the amazing work you do, your calculators, and thanks for all of your recent words of encouragement and perspective. Definitely appreciate it. My question might be simple, but I just wanted to make sure I was doing it correctly. My income has risen since I'm no longer a resident, so I wanted to try delaying the federal tax return strategy that you've suggested. I pulled up the student loan data, and I found my IDR plan anniversary date to be July 20th, 2026. So I was anticipating a restart date of maybe May 20th, 2026. Either way, it's going to be before October. I revoked my consent for the Department of Ed to access the tax info, and just in case they decide to auto recertify, but maybe this wasn't necessary. Am I understanding things correctly? Is it really as simple as one, submit my delayed tax return via the 4868 form and whatever money that I estimate? Two, wait until May, my recertification date. And then three, just submit my old tax return from 2024. If I give the Department of Ed consent, will they just use the 2024 tax return anyway? Thanks again for everything you do, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
So what Dan's referencing is a strategy where if your income is going up a lot, you can essentially strategically delay filing your tax return in the hopes that they use your old tax return to certify your IDR payment. Now, there's nothing illegal at all about this. You can do it in a tax filing extension. Anybody can for any reason whatsoever. So the smart move is to actually not revoke consent for the IRS to share your information, because if you're filing an extension, they don't have that new tax return to go off of, right? So you actually want to give your consent to share either IRS information with your servicer. So you can actually give them that consent. The key part of this strategy is if your IDR certification date is happening kind of in this May to July kind of window where it's after the April tax return deadline, but it's before the October final return deadline for extensions, what you do is you file the tax return extension and then you wait to submit your tax return until sometime in October. And then if that's the case, they will most likely use your old tax return to recertify your IDR payment. So for somebody who's an attending, that means if you're bringing a lower income during training, that might get you a whole extra year of lower payments than you would otherwise have. So it can be a really valuable strategy. It's certainly something that we actively, you know, help people figure out in our tax business that we operate is, you know, we look at people's recertification dates. We think when would be a smart time for them to file their final returns to maximize their savings. The thing that might have gotten miscommunicated for me is that you don't need to revoke consent to share data with IRS. You just have to make sure you file an extension and don't turn in your final tax return until, you know, well after your recertification date. And of course, if your recertification date is in like November or December, then there's no real point in doing an extension probably in that case, because you're going to be using that prior year tax return anyway, because that's past the mid-October deadline for filing final returns. So let's take another listener question.
Hi, Travis. This is Candace. I really appreciate all the things that you guys are doing to keep us abreast of all the latest changes, as frustrating as it might be. I have a scenario that I wanted to share and see if I could get some input. There's a student who's enrolled in college as a sophomore, and the parent has taken out two Parent PLUS loans over the last 2 years. And their plan is to continue to take out the Parent PLUS loans for the students' remaining years in college. Should they be consolidating the two loans that they have now in order to benefit from the, you know, whatever repayment plan options they have? And then if that is the case, what would they do with the last two loans or last remaining loans, I'm assuming two, for the students' remaining time in college? And then what happens with those two loans? But then also, is there a current calculator to use to estimate what the payments might be? The studentaid.gov site has their estimator, but it's utilizing all the older repayment options. So if you're looking for, say, new IBR, or, you know, what options are available after the July 1 time, is there a current calculator that's available somewhere that students and families can use to estimate what their potential payment might be before they select a plan? Again, thank you so much.
So this is actually what I'm going to talk about later in today's podcast. But I mean, our website is probably the best option to look at what folks will have access to with the wrap plan. So studentloanplanner.com, you can look in our menu and you'll see a lot of different calculators that we have for people. The big problem that's going to be faced by parents out there is if somebody's a sophomore going into their junior year and they've got two more years to borrow for school, if you take out any additional loans, you're ineligible for the wrap plan and you're ineligible for everything if you're a parent. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, about the implications for that. but a lot of people are going to have to make some really tough decisions this fall about what to do with financing. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in today's show because it's really relevant to what I'm going to talk about next after we're done with the listener question. So let's take one more listener question.
Hello, I am coming up on my recertification date, which is May 15th of this year. And I haven't recertified since before the pandemic. In fact, I've never paid on my student loans. My income did go up this year, so I'm wondering if it's worth it to file a tax extension, even though it's April that taxes are due. It's not that far before. And if there's any possibility that the recertification deadline could be pushed back again. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, this one's a little bit of an easy one. The short answer is yes, file an extension. Your income went up, so probably that means you're going to get a lower payment by doing an extension, unless you get a capped payment on something like IBR, in which case it wouldn't be relevant. But most likely, you'll get a lower payment, so it makes sense to do an extension since this person mentioned their deadline for IDR recertification is in May. And is there a chance that it'll get extended again? Of course, there's always a chance. Do I think it's likely? No. If anything, I think they might extend. I mean, if they do extend it, though, I will say probably they would do it because they would make an excuse about needing to have the wrap plan available first before they force people to recertify. But we will see. We'll be monitoring that. And of course, we'll share that information with y'all when we hear it. That's all for the listener voicemails. If you want to ask your own question, know that you can go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and ask whatever question you want. It can be about student loans. It can be about life. It can be about whatever you want. And if it's a good question, we'll feature it in the podcast. You probably have like an 80, 90% chance of getting featured. The only ones we don't feature are the ones that are maybe like, you know, way too long, like 4 or 5 minutes or something like that. So try to keep the question, you know, 30 seconds to a couple minutes. And yeah, we hope to feature your question on a future podcast episode. That's studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. And now I want to pivot to talking about the main idea of today's pod, which is what will parents and students do this coming fall with financing higher education? Here's the big thing that people need to think about. If you have anybody in your family or you know somebody that's taking out loans after July 2026, or maybe you are, or even just maybe it's a friend of a friend, just so that you can be knowledgeable about what's going down. If you take out at least one loan after July 2026, you are blocked from everything but the wrap plan. Okay, so I want to explain what that means. If you have Grad Plus loans, you're in like your second year of dental school, you're taking out loans, you know, in July 2026 and beyond, you're not going to be able to access the pay, the new IBR plan, ICR plan on your old loans if you do that. So that's a big problem because think about this, okay? Think about the fact, you know, to show you the biggest question mark of who will be impacted by this. Let's say you're a rising fourth year dental student and you're taking out $100,000 for the fourth year dental school. Let's say you've already got $300,000 plus some interest. So you've already got, let's say, $350,000 of loans and you have $100,000 left to borrow. What happens there if you do that is you'll have $450,000 when you graduate. And then you would only have access to the wrap plan, which is 10% of your income for 30 years, instead of for the new IBR plan, which is 20 years with a better deduction. That could be an enormous difference in the total amount of money you pay on your loans. So much so that in some cases, some folks that are rising fourth year students would want to consider whether or not it's a smarter idea to take private student loans for their fourth year of education. Now, that's not a good idea if you're eligible for the PSLF program, because PSLF is going to be 10 years with wrap and it's 10 years with new IBR. So there's only a moderate payment difference between the two in most cases, unless you have like 8 children or something. And so if you think about the difference in the payments, that's not a big driver. So go ahead and take out the max loans, go ahead and take advantage of being grandfathered in. So in other words, med students, take out every last dime of federal Grad Plus loans that you can after July 2026, because you still have access to PSLF via the wrap plan, you might as well. Even if you don't get the wrap plan or PSLF, even if you don't do PSLF, the wrap plan has an option for interest subsidies that will keep the loans at bay during residency and fellowship. So that's a good plan, even if you're eventually going to pay the loans off. So med students that are, you know, borrowing still, wave it all in. But for folks who are vet students or dental students or even law students that are not going to be doing the public interest law path with PSLF, if you're doing private sector, then yeah, you can be grandfathered in with Grad Plus borrowing limits, but you're going to be having to get shoved onto the wrap plan, which again is 30 years if you're not doing PSLF, you're in the private sector, instead of the much more generous 20 years with new IBR, which is a long-term plan for people who have no new loans after July 2026. So do you want to pay an extra decade to take out loans in your fourth year of school, or, you know, third year if you're in law school? Probably not. But would you want to do it if you're in first or second year of a program? You probably should, because then you at least can treat your loans like an income tax and pay 10% of income instead of have it be something like a big monthly payment, right? Now, that's for people who are students themselves borrowing for graduate or professional school. It's a totally different animal if you are a parent borrowing on behalf of a child. So this is really concerning. I would say it's almost built to blow up. I don't think it was built to blow up intentionally. I think it was just a product of the reconciliation bill being rushed through without as much thought being put into it as maybe there could have been. What is going to happen with Parent Plus borrowers is if you take out at least one loan, even a small loan, after July 2026, all of your existing loans are ineligible for IBR and pay and ICR. That's bad news. Think about having $400,000 of loans and you have gotten two kids through school and you're waiting on the third and you have one more year to go. Do you want to take out $50,000 or $100,000 and have your entire $400,000 something balance made inaccessible to IBR? That's bad. Now, for Parent Plus borrowers, you also are blocked after July 2026 from ever accessing the RAP plan, the RAP plan. So because that's the only option for IDR after July 2026, and Parent Plus borrowers and even people who consolidated Parent Plus are excluded from the RAP plan explicitly in the law, you can't access RAP. And then if you take out at least one loan after July 2026, you're blocked from accessing the IBR plans as a Parent Plus borrower. So effectively, Parent Plus folks are in a terrible situation right now if they're needing to continue borrowing for future semesters, because you're grandfathered in. The schools will tell you, hey, go borrow because we need to get paid. We want to keep your kid in school and have them graduate. So the schools are not going to want to give you a cheaper price. They're going to want to tell you the price is the price and we need you to pay it. And oh, by the way, you can easily do it by consenting to Parent Plus loans. But what they are going to be incentivized to not make very clear to you is that will cause you to lose access to every affordable repayment plan if you do that. So that is a real mess. It was not thought through. And if I had to gamble, I would gamble the fact that eventually, if there's a Democratic administration in the future, that they will probably fix this. But I would also not want to gamble my personal finances and my own retirement on that happening. So I've had some people say, well, I want to see if there's a way that I can become a professional student again or stay enrolled enough to do in-school deferment so that the bill never comes due. That's probably not realistic to be able to do that forever. And, you know, if you think about the impact of taking out home equity loan or a private student loan for year four of someone's education, that could be an enormous burden because it'll be a large monthly payment, right? It'll be a big amount of money you have to actually pay back versus just have something that there's no marginal cost to it because you're just adding it on to a balance that's going to be paid back as a percent of your income anyway. So this is a really big challenge that families are going to be facing this fall. The folks that are in their third or fourth year of dental, vet, med school, those folks are going to have decisions to make that are going to be impacting them. But by far the biggest impact is going to be having something affordable versus nothing at all. And that's going to be faced by parents that are needing to borrow for their children's undergrad education this coming fall. What can you do in this situation? It's an individual choice. I can't really make the decision for people because this is such a difficult choice. I would say that if there is an option for a student to transfer to a cheaper school where you can afford to pay for it, that is probably the more responsible decision that enables you to be sure that you can retire. If you are a gambler and you don't mind gambling away your potential financial future, you could take out the PLUS loan uncapped for whatever amount you need to do to finish up your kid's borrowing. But you need to think about the fact that that could potentially wreck your retirement. Now, when I say wreck your retirement, let me put a caveat on there. There probably is a way to retire even with defaulted Parent Plus loans. The way you would do it is allow them to garnish your income where they will take 15% of your income. That's supposed to include Social Security. I think the Trump administration temporarily halted them garnishing Social Security for a little bit because that's sort of a politically sensitive thing to garnish. But if you get in default in Parent Plus, they can take 15% of your income. So is there a way that you could live if they garnished 15% of your income in retirement? Most likely, yeah. How would you do it? Well, you'd probably need to have a very minimal fixed payment around. You'd have to have as low of a fixed payment for housing and cars as you possibly could. You'd want to wait to claim Social Security until as late as possible, most likely, to have a maximum monthly benefit. And then you'd want to be really careful with how you pull out money to minimize that taxable income to minimize the amount that they could garnish. Now, the fact that we're even talking about how to retire with defaulted Parent PLUS loans is a systematic failure. And it's one that will eventually show up and will eventually probably Congress will be forced to fix it in the same way that they were forced to fix the spousal consolidation loans being unable to be split up because of an oversight in the law. So I think this is a much bigger oversight than the spousal consolidation loans because that affected several hundred people. This affects tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of borrowers that are going to be forced into default because of the way this bill was written. So it's a real difficult decision. I will say if you can easily borrow private loans or a home equity loan for your fourth year of one child's education for fall 2026, it's probably best to do that and not take out any Parent PLUS loans. If you have a child in like first year that you've already borrowed a ton of Parent PLUS loans and you have other children that you've borrowed a ton of Parent PLUS loans for too, you might weigh the pros and cons of taking the risk of taking out so much in loans that you might have to become a professional student to do in-school deferment, or that you might strategically default on your Parent PLUS loans. I'm not saying that that's something that I would recommend, but I'm saying it's something that some people will think about. It's always best to keep all the Parent PLUS loans in one parent's name instead of two. You always want to try to focus all the debt on one parent just in case, because the debt is forgiven in the event of death. So in general, it's better to have it go in the name of the lower income earner and the one who might pass away first, actuarially speaking. So, you know, if you have a heterosexual couple where there's an older male that makes less money, that would be the person you'd want to put the Parent PLUS loans in the name of, for example, because you'd be winning on the lower income thing, but also the actuarial expected, you know, death sooner than the female spouse, right? But this is all real complicated stuff. We're going to be really focusing down on this for people who are still borrowing, because that's some of our audience. It's not as big of a part of our audience as the people who are already in repayment. I recognize that, but that's okay. I think that at a minimum, it's interesting to know this stuff to be able to help others, because how often do people come up to established professionals and say, should I go to dental school? Should I go to vet school? Should I go to med school? And it's pretty helpful to be informed, even if you're already in repayment yourself, to be able to give somebody an honest answer. I've got some math that we've run up and looked at where even with the wrap plan, with the 30-year wrap plan, in most cases, it's still very much worth going to pretty much almost any professional school program with a couple exceptions compared to just stopping an undergrad. Now, that's on average. That's not going to be true for everybody. But if you look at whether or not professional schools give a return on investment, if you're looking at the wrap plan and losing 10% of your taxable income to your loans, the answer is you have more after-tax take-home pay after loans as well than you do if you'd just gone to undergrad only, in most cases from what our analysis is. Not in all cases, but in the majority of cases. So again, this is just going to be a big mess coming up on this giant cliff of borrowing. I think the people who will be the most impacted, again, are going to be the parents that already have a lot of Parent PLUS loans that still have kids in school. I would say number two highest impacted group is going to be the folks going to their first semester of professional school, because those are going to be the people who will not be able to borrow more than $20,500 per year if you're not in a professional degree classification, or $50,000 per year if you are. And that's going to cause a lot of dental, med, vet students that are in their first year of school this coming fall to not have enough money to borrow. They'll have to turn to private student loans. And then that last group is going to be people with Grad PLUS that decide that they strategically want to borrow private student loans for year four or their final year of their degree so they can retain access to the new IBR program. That's going to be mostly people that are not pursuing PSLF, because it's the reason is you're trying to preserve that 20-year IDR plan instead of the 30-year wrap plan. We are hearing stories from schools, just to be clear, that are intentionally trying to get people started in their degree programs before July, to borrow before July, so that they're grandfathered in for 3 years under the Grad PLUS borrowing limits. Theoretically, there shouldn't be a problem with that, but a lot of the schools are nervous about this because, you know, they're just wondering, is this even okay? We don't know. Well, the law says if you have a program you've started already before July 2026 and you've borrowed for that program already, then you get to borrow Grad PLUS for either 3 years or the rest of your program's expected completion length, whichever's shorter. So a maximum amount of borrowing somebody would get if you start this fall and you've never borrowed before, if you start right before the July 2026 date and borrow in time, then you get only 3 years. So you would not, let's say you start like med school in April this year somehow, you would only be able to borrow for M1, 2, 3, and you wouldn't be able to borrow for that fourth year, the fourth year of med school in that case. You'd have to do all private loans for that. So this is all kinds of confusing. And we're going to continue to follow this. We're going to continue monitoring it. My view is there are a lot of professionals in the financial aid sector that are very concerned, very tuned in, very much paying attention. We run across some that are just really unsure, have no idea what to do, are just sort of sending out cost of attendance packets and, you know, how much it costs and just hoping that people just accept it and self-pay and they're not really sure what's going to happen. So this is going to be a wild ride. We'll cover it on the Student Loan Planner podcast. For existing borrowers, just remember that you want to be real careful about taking out any loans after July 2026. It's probably a bad idea to do that unless you're forced to, unless you have no choice in most cases. And then we're going to be monitoring all the usual stuff we do about tax season. We'll talk about IDR recertification dates, PSLF buyback, when the wrap plan is going to go live, if there are any concerning regulations that are coming out with the OB3 bill, as well as the save plan settlement, which requires new regulations to be written to replace the Biden era regulations. Still got a lot to talk about, even though we're 10 years into this podcast or something like that. So if you have your own questions you want to ask on the pod, remember studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. And if you need a plan, you know where to go for that, studentloanplanner.com/book. Finally, if you want to go a lot deeper than just student loans, check out our financial planning business, slpwealth.com. You can press the start or get started link and see the details about that on that website if you're interested in that. Thank you for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.